This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today on the Jodcast, we have Dr. Chris Hales from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in the US. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
So you were talking today about some anomaly in radio sources. Could you try and like describe originally what that anomaly was?
So if you look out at distant radio galaxies, you can see them in both their total intensity light, and also if you put on your polarized radio sunglasses, you can see them in polarized light. So if you look out in the total intensity light, then you can count up how many galaxies that you see, depending on how bright they are. And with that, you can try and predict what you would see if you put on your polarized sunglasses. And so what people previously did was they made this prediction of what you would see with your polarized sunglasses on, and then they went out and tried to measure how many sources they actually saw, and they found a discrepancy. And this discrepancy hinted that maybe something very interesting was happening with very faint polarized radio galaxies. They might have very, very strong magnetic fields in them, or they might... There might be some unexpected population of faint sources coming into view.
Okay. So what are these sources? What kind of causes the radio emission that you're looking at?
So the radio emission in these distant galaxies comes from very high-energy electrons, and they produce a type of radiation called synchrotron radiation. And this radiation is linearly polarized, so you can observe it with your polarized sunglasses on.
Okay. What was your aim then? So this kind of was the background. So what were you trying to do at that point then?
So the preliminary studies had been performed. And so what we wanted to do was to try and look with some more sensitive data and with some more careful new techniques for analysis in order to really understand this unusual behavior. Really, were there more of these faint sources Or perhaps was it something that might have been an artifact of the original observations? And so we went back and we performed a different survey. We kept our radio camera open for much longer, so we took a much more sensitive snapshot of the sky. And using that, we were able to, and we very carefully analysed that data. And unfortunately, we didn't find this unexpected population. We found what would you would normally have expected from beforehand.
Okay, so firstly, how do you do this prediction? I mean, how do you have any idea how many polarized sources you'd have in the first place?
So the idea is that we have a good handle from many decades of studies on what the total intensity light, the regular light is. We have a good handle on how many galaxies you would see at various brightnesses as you look out into the universe. We can estimate a distribution of polarization that you would see for different brightnesses of different sources. And so if you combine these two, you know roughly how many total intensity sources there are, and you know roughly what kind of polarization or what kind of fractional polarization a typical total intensity source should have, you can then predict how many polarized sources you should see.
Okay. So this prediction worked for kind of the bright sources. You saw the amount of bright sources that you'd expect to see.
But then exactly, yes.
There were too many faint sources. What were the kind of theoretical explanations other than just a data artifact?
Well, the original observations didn't go too far to try and explain what was found, because it was a discovery paper, and people then started investigating the other properties of these galaxies, trying to target these galaxies and see, for example, were their infrared properties different from the typical sources that we see.
Did they find anything? Did they see any differences between these extra sources? I assume there were a number of sources which were brighter than you'd expect them to be. I mean, did they see anything different?
So their other multi-wavelength properties didn't come across as particularly different to the typical sources that we already knew about.
Okay, so basically this one paper found some extra bright sources, and there didn't seem to be any reason why they would be brighter than you'd expect. Is that?
Yeah, except it was a few papers, actually. It was a series of different studies had looked into this and had made this essentially preliminary finding of more of these types of galaxies than you'd normally expect. And so more recently, people were trying to understand this, and so we went back and did a very careful analysis using new techniques for analysing the polarized light from these galaxies in order to really understand whether what we were seeing was a true astrophysical cause or whether it was something that could have been caused by just the way that you analyze your data.
Okay, so if I got this right, kind of you said this was your PhD, right?
This was what I did for my PhD.
Okay, yeah. So I'm assuming at the beginning of your PhD, your supervisor saw that there seemed to be no real reason for these extra sources to be brighter, and they're like, okay, well, we need someone to try and work out, do the data analysis in a better way. Is that kind of...
Sort of. Actually, as it happened, at the very beginning, we were more interested in really understanding this new population, because if someone finds that there's a new type of source or there's something unusual going on, the idea would be to try and investigate that more deeply and for example, look more closely at these galaxies and see, do they have, for example, much stronger magnetic fields? Because stronger magnetic fields could lead to higher levels of this polarized emission from these fainter galaxies. And if so, that would tell you something about the magnetic histories of galaxies, because as we know, looking out in redshift, you're looking back in time. And so finding galaxies with much stronger magnetic fields at higher redshift would tell you something about how galaxies have evolved, and that would be of great interest. And so we were really trying to follow that up. And as it turned out, the more we got into the data analysis, the more we became suspect that something else might be at play.
Okay, so you started your work hoping. Fair enough.
Hoping for an interesting find, and in the end finding that maybe the more interesting thing was the data analysis, which to most people is more of a boring, bland topic, but it's something that is extremely important, because it's what links the observation to some kind of scientific conclusion. That method of how you actually analyze your data is critical.
No, I agree with you. That's basically what my PhD is, as well as doing data analysis that isn't biased. Okay, so people have found these faint sources that appear to be brighter than you expect. Okay.
In polarization.
In polarization. Not in the intensity, but in polarization. So what was causing them to find that? I mean, what about the data analysis they were doing actually caused them to find a higher intensity than they would expect?
It's probably a combination of a few things. But one of the things we found was that the standard tools that people use for just measuring how bright a source is from total intensity doesn't transfer well when you're measuring how bright a polarized source is. And that's just to do with the noise environment in which you're making these measurements. You know, if you take a photograph at night time, you see that the photograph is fuzzy. It's got this, you'll have some noise in it. And if the techniques developed to operate within this noise environment in the radio and total intensity didn't transfer well into polarization, and so we had to develop a new tool to analyze how bright polarized sources are, which we called BlobCut, and which is going through and it's cataloging blobs in an image. And it turns out that this tool was actually quite good in total intensity as well. But we found that this was probably one of the main reasons why some of the previous studies were finding the different results.
The impression I got from the talk was that you were kind of fitting for a smooth kind of normal distribution on the intensity maps. Like when you have a map, so I found you have a blob, and that blob underlying should be a kind of smooth normal distribution around the center. But obviously you've got noise on top of that.
Yes.
So for the intensity, that's what they were fitting for, I assume. They
yes.
were fitting for this, but you're saying that didn't work on the polarization.
Yeah, so the typical profile that people use is a Gaussian, a normal distribution, so that your source looks a little bit like a two-dimensional Gaussian. It's a two-dimensional little normal distribution. That's what your sources look like in total intensity. But in polarization, just due to some subtle statistics that come into how you produce your polarization images, you can no longer assume that that two-dimensional Gaussian shape is an appropriate way to fit your sources at very low signal-to-noise ratio. So these faint sources that you're interested in pushing at the detection limit of your survey. So a new approach is needed to be found, and so that's what we tried to do.
Okay, so you literally just were able to relax that assumption, and then that gave you a better...
Yeah. The one of the main things that that helps is relaxing that assumption that these things have to follow this 2D elliptical Gaussian shape, which again in total intensity it makes a lot of sense because that's the natural type of shape you'd expect to observe in a radio image.
Okay, brilliant. So you said that this was your PhD. And I assume you've kind of finished your PhD and now a postdoc.
Yes.
So what are you doing now? What are you working on now?
So now I'm over in the desert, in the desert of New Mexico in the US. And again, I'm working on deep polarization surveys, but this time I'm using them to try and... I'm performing an extremely deep survey with a telescope called the Very Large Array, and we have 1,000 hours of time to stare at one point in the sky. Just keep your radio shutter, your radio eye open for 1,000 hours to make one of the deepest images of the radio sky ever. And by making a very, very deep image, you can see more and more sources, and so you have a much denser grid of sources across your field of view. And this is really good if you want to detect lots of polarized sources. And the reason we want to detect lots of polarized sources is we want to look at how the polarized light from these sources is subtly affected by magnetic fields as this light traverses large-scale structure, the cosmic web throughout our universe. And using this, we want to try and measure magnetic fields out in the filaments, in the cosmic web of intergalactic space. And this will try and help to better understand the magnetic history of our universe and answer questions such as, were there magnetic fields generated soon after the Big Bang, or were most magnetic fields that we find in galaxies today, do they derive from, for example, the process of galaxies very first forming, or, for example, could magnetic fields in the galaxies we observe today be largely seeded by outflows from the very first supermassive black holes, or from early stars exploding, for example? And so understanding where magnetic fields come from in the 13.7 billion year cosmic history of the universe is really a fundamental unsolved problem in astrophysics. And so we're trying to make headway by making one of the first measurements of magnetic fields in intergalactic space.
So you're trying to map the magnetic field with cosmic time and space, or is it just cosmic time?
So our study is a very, very narrow pencil beam line of sight through the galaxy. So we're typically looking just with the cosmic time aspect. You can statistically convert that into what's going on as a function of three-dimensional space.
Okay, so you're trying to map the magnetic field through as it grows or shrinks, whatever happened to it.
Yes.
Through cosmic time. So how do you know what the magnetic field is by looking at these polarized sources?
The linearly polarized light from these background sources exhibits Faraday rotation. So this is just birefringence in the intergalactic medium. So what that means is that it's much like a calcite crystal. When you place it over some text that you might have done in school, you can see that the light is split into two different rays, and that's you're actually splitting into two different polarization modes there. You can utilize this effect in radio astronomy because the amount what happens in the intergalactic medium due to this Faraday rotation effect is that this position angle of linear polarization will be rotated by some degree as it comes towards you, but that rotation depends on the wavelength that you're observing at. So if you look at lots of different wavelengths of light, of radio light, and you look at how much the position angle has been rotated, you can measure something called the rotation measure. And that rotation measure contains within it information about the electron density and the magnetic fields between you and the background source. So if you pick a background source that's halfway across the other side of the universe, then it encapsulates all of the path length along that distance. And so you can look at sources at different redshifts, for example, to try and build up a picture of how magnetic fields have evolved. Or you can look at correlations between nearby sources. So sources that are nearby traverse similar lines of sight throughout the cosmic web, and so they'll have presumably similar they'll traverse similar magnetic field structures, and so they'll have similar rotation measures. And those that are a bit further apart in terms of angular separation on the sky will be less correlated because they'll traverse rather different structures. And so you can combine all of this information in order to better understand magnetic fields in large-scale structure.
Sounds really interesting. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.